Episode 10 of the Bunty Gap Podcast. This is Sweet Nick in the control room, and I'm with Dave and Adam. How's it going, guys?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going okay. I'm a little under the weather. Just before we started recording, I finished a large bowl of soup, so I probably have about, I don't know, 45 minutes in me before the cold and flu medicine kicks in. So let's get this done.
That's fine. My laptop has 48 remaining on the battery, so let's just motor.
Clock is ticking.
Well, today we're talking about Jared Saltalamacchia, Devin Travis, and the Hall of Fame.
I think it's pronounced Jerod Saltalamacchia.
I think it's
pronounced... Oh, that's the word I had trouble pronouncing, actually, yeah.
Jerod Saltalamacchia.
I think Buck Martinez is going to do with that word, Saltalamacchia.
He's probably going to try to pronounce it in its native Spanish, Saltalamacchia, like he does with Ezequiel Carrera.
Well, we've not seen Jerod Saltalamacchia before.
That was my really bad Buck Martinez. It's better when I'm not sick. I guarantee it. Yeah, so, I don't know. I guess they went out and got the backup catcher that they wanted. I don't particularly like Saltalamacchia. In fact, I think when 2 weeks ago when we did our which free agent would you not like to see on the Blue Jays, I said Jake Peavy, and I think I said Saltalamacchia.
I'm not sure you did.
I thought
you
might have said... the whole... needing a backup catcher thing, and this is not sating my appetite for one.
I don't mind it. I'll take the opposite position on this, guys, because it's a 1.25, correct me if I'm wrong,
1.25 deal. No. If he makes the major league roster.
If he makes the major league, that's a pretty low risk contract, and it's even if he makes a team, it's not that much money. It is four times less than what Justin Smoke is getting paid.
Yes, but he is not a very good defensive catcher. And that's part of my problem. Baseball Prospectus does not like his catching. Catching metrics are quite poor with Baseball Prospectus and didn't do so great last year on stolen base attempts. And they were looking to get a defensive first catcher. This is not what they've gotten. So unless there's something in the StatCast data that we're not seeing here, I don't think he's worth the 1.25.
So I'm going to try to pull that up right quick because I'm seeing on FanGraphs that he's rated at one run above average on defense.
Yep.
Which would indicate that he's okay defensively.
Mm-hmm. But Warp places higher value on things like pitch framing and controlling the run game. Whereas his Warp on, that's Baseball Prospectus's version of WAR, has him at -0.7 last year.
Mm-hmm. Do they have an individualized pitch framing metric?
Yeah, you go to the catching tab.
Hmm.
So Baseball Prospectus just this week rolled out a new metric called called strikes above average. And this is a weighted stat that basically gives you where the league averages for called strikes is. And minus or positive gives you where you are relative to that average. So... last year, Jerod Saltalamacchia's called strikes above average was actually -0.015 runs below average, so he's not getting more called strikes than some other catchers in the league.
Looking at that number, it doesn't seem that significant. So what can you tell us about called strikes above average? Like, what is the worst possible amount, I guess, under that stat? What is the best possible amount?
According to Baseball Prospectus, he was worth -8.8 framing runs last year and -1 throwing runs. So again, Baseball Prospectus is not high on his catcher ability.
So how does he compare to Deonor Navarro, for example?
Deonor Navarro's CCSA last year was -0.024.
Right.
So actually slightly worse than Saltalamacchia's.
Based on the numbers, though, they kind of seem significantly worse.
Well, so let me read you the top 15 called strikes above average according to Baseball Prospectus last year. So Miguel Montero was the best at 0.028. Yasmani Grandal, Buster Posey, Jeff Mathis. You got guys like, I'm not going to read the whole 15. Anyways, Russell Martin's in there at the 15th best, and he had 0.013 called strikes above average. So that'll give you a sense of, you know, where some of the good or widely regarded defensive catchers rank.
How far down there is Saltalamacchia? He's essentially negative Martin is what he is, right?
Yes. And all the way down at the bottom of the list, not the bottom of the list, but all the way down near the bottom of the list, you'll find Jared Saltalamacchia ranked 89th.
Hmm. So theoretically, if Saltalamacchia and Martin play the same number of innings, then their runs saved and lost should even out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't. We know that Martin will play, what, 100 to 120 games? And Jared.
Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully, right?
And the backup will play, even if it ends up being Saltalamacchia, will play the other 50 to 60.
And I'm not super worried about Saltalamacchia's durability. I mean, he played 92 games last year, and he was 31, so he'll be 32 next year.
In terms of framing runs, then, Gerald, I'm going to call him Gerald, I think that's what I'm going to do. Gerald, oh my God, I can't do it. Can't do it. Jared Saltalamacchia ranked 95th. Out of 104 catchers, better than the 104th catcher, who is Gianna Navarro.
Is framing runs a cumulative stat, though? Like, could that be as a result of not having played as many innings?
It is a cumulative stat.
So I'm seeing that he only played 92 games last year, so mm-hmm. wouldn't that knock him kind of further down the list because he wouldn't have as many opportunities to accumulate saved runs?
Yes, but also, if you thought he was bad over 92... to take that to 162 might mean he's a lot worse.
That's very fair.
And again, we're just as comparison, Russell Martin in at 14.2 positive framing runs.
All right, so overall impression on Gerald Saltalamacchia. Saltalamacchia.
Gerald, I don't know. I guess there maybe could have been better defensive first catchers out there that they could have gotten. It sounds like the pitching staff might suffer if they have to see a lot of Gerald. I'm going to say Gerald for the rest of my life. Jared Saltalamacchia.
Is Nick Hundley still available or did he resign? Because looking at Nick Hundley, he's also at negative 0.015 and his framing runs were actually a lot worse. They were at negative 11.4.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have done worse if you're the Jays, I guess. And they had been rumored to be looking at Nick Hundley. So maybe it's kind of a relief that they didn't get this other guy.
Yeah, it could just be a price point type thing. Who mm-hmm. knows?
The Giants actually signed Nick Hundley to a $2 million major league deal.
Well, the Giants just got a worse pitch framer than Gerald Saltalamacchia.
It's pronounced Gerard. I mean, overall, I guess it's an okay bargain to have. It's a nice insurance policy. So right now they can go into camp with AJ Jimenez as the backup, and if he doesn't become the guy, then they have Saltalamacchia, and it's, you know, it's still the backup. So if Salty is meant to be the third guy on the depth chart, I suppose it makes sense.
Yeah. Do they have catching stats available for... They do for AAA. Jimenez in AAA doesn't actually appear to be that bad. He's actually at negative .009, which is better than Saltalamacchia. Now, given that's not a major league thing, but you think that framing is a skill that would transcend levels, right?
Well, you'd hope so. But, and, I mean, mind you, the framing in major leagues is a lot more difficult because the pitchers are better.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
And the umpires are better, too.
Yeah. Still AAA umpires.
Cool. Anything else you want to talk about?
Nope, that's it. So we'll be back next week on the Bunt the Gap podcast.
For real, though. We'll take a break.
Yeah, I got to blow my nose.
Welcome back to the Bunt of the Gap podcast.
Do you have food in your mouth?
Oh, 100%.
Spit it out.
No, I'm going to
finish. We're doing a podcast.
I'm going to finish it.
We're doing a podcast.
All right.
No, don't eat another one. You're done.
Stuff.
I'm taking the box away.
Hey, hold on.
You got a pile. You got a whole pile of them. Oh, my God.
Just shove as many in your mouth as possible, and then just keep chewing, and I'll do the intro.
All right.
You could have done that while I was eating soup.
All right, welcome back to the Bunt of the Gap podcast. Dave, you wrote an article this week for bruntofthegap.com called The Year Devin Travis Didn't Walk Against Lefties.
Yep.
Do you have to talk about that article at all, or is it just self-explanatory? Is that it?
Honestly, that's the main takeaway.
give us a quick rundown, though.
Okay, well, I wrote it mostly while under the spell of DayQuil, so let me just refresh my own memory here. But basically, Devin Travis went the entirety of the 2016 season without taking a walk against a left-handed pitcher. So in terms of people that had more walks against lefties than him, let me start by saying these three names: Kevin Pillar, Ezekiel Carrera, and Darwin Barney, guys that never walk. And they all had more walks against lefties than Devin Travis, who had zero, and in fact hadn't walked against a lefty since July 25th of 2015. And actually, that pitcher was Jay Happ when he was still playing with the Mariners.
In that span, how many games did Devin Travis play, and how many at-bats did he have against left-handed pitchers?
Well, so he would get injured on the 31st of July, and he didn't see another lefty that season. So the last lefty he saw was Jay Happ on the 25th of 2015, got injured on the 31st, and was shut down until about May of 2016.
Mm-hmm. He did play 101 games in 2016. So I guess my question is, how many lefties did he actually play in the lineup against?
Was it 101 games?
According to FanGraphs, it is, yeah.
Okay, good, because he had 101 plate appearances against lefties throughout the season.
Wow.
And took absolutely no walks. So it's not like he only saw 30 of them and decided not to walk. He saw 100 of them, and in none of those plate appearances did he take a walk against a left-handed pitcher. So I tried to look into it, and one of the reasons I was looking at this was because I was looking at the handedness of the roster. So I was comparing the OPS of the roster versus lefties and the OPS of the roster versus righties. And I was seeing where, you know, the team might have some weaknesses or there could be some platoon advantages to be gained. And actually, Devin Travis was pretty brutal last year against lefties. He hit .617 OPS against lefties. And the year before that, he hit .974. So I was kind of wondering, you know, what happened? Is this a recent development? Could he always hit lefties? Could he never hit lefties? What happened here? And then went back through his minor league record, and, you know, in 2013, in three levels of the minors, he hit .922 OPS. And in 2014, he had a .781 OPS against lefties, right? Against lefties.
Against lefties, correct.
Comma, right.
And this stemmed from our discussion of how Steve Pierce was a lefty masher and Carrera was, well, he hit well against lefties, and Upton hit well against lefties. So who are the best Jays against lefties?
Well, if we're going to rank it by OPS last year, Josh Donaldson had a .932 OPS against lefties, and Michael Saunders, believe it or not, had a .927 OPS against lefties. And then it was Edwin Encarnacion. All the way down there at the bottom is Devin Travis with a .617. And I was looking into reasons why that might be, and overall, against all pitchers, Devin Travis's swing rate was up last year, about 5%. So he swung at 5% more pitches in 2016 than he did in 2015. And this could be for a few reasons. You know, it could have been approach. It could have been something that he heard from the hitting coaches saying, you know, try to put the ball in play to all fields like you do. It could have just been him putting more pressure on himself because he was in the leadoff spot and he felt the need to, you know, get on base or get a hit and prove himself. So, you know, really don't know why. And then on buntothegap.com, on the article I've posted is heat maps versus lefties between 2015 and 2016. And you can really see some of the zones where he took more swings against pitches that are just outside the zone.
Did you have the opportunity to run any comparisons between the caliber of left-handed pitchers that he faced in 2016 versus 2015?
No, I did not. And I think, you know, it's not like the Jays were shielding a right-handed batter from lefties in 2015.
Sure.
So I don't think he was necessarily being protected in the lineup from them. And when your platoon partner is, I want to say platoon, but when you got Ryan Goins on the bench, they're not putting a Ryan Goins in against a lefty, right? So we can assume that Travis was probably seeing the best lefties in the league. Sure, he saw Clayton Kershaw in 2016, right? But
and Chris Sale and David Price.
Yes, but so. He still would have seen those guys in 2015 as well. And the conclusion of this article basically finishes with Devin Travis has basically ended, you know, a few seasons now being injured, right? We saw him limp off the field at the end of the playoffs this year. You know, he ended his season the year before that injured. And so he's very quickly become one of the, in the top five of most injured guys by days on the DL for the Blue Jays in the past 5 years. So even going back to 2012, you know, considering guys like Jose Reyes, Melky Cabrera, those are guys who've spent fewer days on the DL. And so Devin Travis is quickly climbing up that ladder of often injured Blue Jays. And so, you know, he's going to be important for the Blue Jays in the 2017 season. And he's going to need to be able to stay on the field. And he's, you know, they will probably look for him to be the leadoff hitter.
Yeah, and Devin Travis was a guy that not too long ago a lot of people were touting as the future MVP, which is crazy. But, you know, to get to that level, you have to stay healthy. And not only that, but you also have to hit well against lefties.
Yeah. Well, he was worth 2.5 wins last year, which is pretty great. And the year before that, and in his half season or whatever, he was worth 2.1. So if he can, you know, produce as he did in 2015 against lefties and hit his 900 plus OPS against them, there's a chance he could be a 4-win player. And 4-win player is a great player, right?
Yeah.
You know?
How do you feel about the Jays prospects going into 2017 now with a lot of left-handed opponents on Boston? Possibly a couple on the Yankees.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant their literal prospects.
No. I mean, their chances, their odds there.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with Travis. If they decide to platoon him with Darwin Barney, who has hit lefties better than Travis, at least last year, it'll be interesting to see. You know, Melvin Upton and Ezekiel Carrera both hit lefties really well, and we know Steve Pierce does, so there may be some interesting juggling of the lineup that happens. You know, who knows?
Given that he's young enough, do you not? I mean, like, it's probably just something that they can hope to correct as opposed to have to substitute him out every time there's a left-handed pitcher, right?
Yes.
This is not a flaw that is too late to overcome.
Well, again, I don't know. You know, this is all speculation here, so I don't know what was the result of a lingering injury. You know, maybe the shoulder or the hip wasn't feeling as great, or maybe just wasn't seeing pitches as well against lefties, so who knows? You know, it's possible the injury was still playing a part in that, and I can't say, and you know, who knows if the Blue Jays can say, maybe only Devin Travis knows. So all speculation at this point.
All right, no further questions.
All right, we're gonna take a break. I have a question for Dave and Adam about your opinions on the Hall of Fame. I'm new to baseball fandom, and I don't understand a certain aspect of the Hall of Fame. Why is there a 10-year maximum where someone is eligible to be voted in?
So I don't know why there actually is a 10-year maximum. I'm not against there being a 10-year maximum.
Yeah, I'm of the idea that the guy doesn't stop becoming a baseball player after 10 years out of the league.
Okay.
So why can't there just be an indefinite thing?
So my understanding is that there's two ways to get into the Hall of Fame. There's through the writers and then through the
Veterans Committee.
The era committee,
yeah,
which is formerly the Veterans Committee. Mm-hmm. And it used to be a 15-year ballot system with the writers, but I think it got reduced to 10 in 2014. And baseballhall.org appears to confirm this fact. Personal opinion on 10 versus 15, I don't know, like, at which point, and I'll flip this back to you guys, at which point is a player not famous enough to get into the Hall of Fame? If he's just on the ballot long enough to get in with a weak class, does that make him as famous as he should have been, you know, 5 years earlier?
Well, I think that's the responsibility of the writers to not vote those people in. Like, there's not a minimum people that have to get voted in every year. So if you have a really weak class and you're like, well, maybe this guy from the 60s can be voted in, don't vote him in. If he's not a Hall of Famer, he's not a Hall of Famer.
Well,
only you have to take them off the ballot.
So I guess they made it 10 to make it match the 10-year grace period that writers have to be writing baseball.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up. So it's the concept of, if you've been writing for baseball for 10 years, then you will have seen, you know, hopefully at least a few years of the guy, 5 years out of baseball that until you're eligible.
Yeah.
So if you've been writing for baseball for 10 years, and these guys now who were recently put on the ballot, you've seen them play for at least 5 years. So it's,
which is kind of though, because they retire at what, age 40 or something, for the best ones anyway, the ones that usually make the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Play long careers unless they get injured. But then you've only seen their last good, like hypothetically, if you've only written for 10 years, you've only seen the last 5 good years, which for anyone other than David Ortiz doesn't mean they had a great last 5 years. They just had really
good. No, that's only for brand new writers, so. That's only if you've only been writing for 10 years. Sorry, brand new voters, I should be saying.
Well, yeah, in order to vote, you need to have written for 10 years. I'm not saying that everyone's only written for 10 years, but...
Your point as to why there's a limit at all, I think is just going to come down to vote splitting. So maybe it's an archaic system, but if you've got a minimum threshold of 75% of ballots in order to get in the Hall of Fame, if you expand that to, say, unlimited amount of time, so you have players from, you know, the 1920s who are still on the ballot and looking to get in, it's, you know, A, are you really informed about that person? And then B, you know, how many votes are you ever going to be able to get?
Yeah.
If you know, if people are voting for guys way down the list. And the problem with the BBWAA, well, not to say that it's a problem, but, you know, it's all organized into local chapters, too. So there's a Toronto chapter of the BBWAA, and you can bet that those guys may have a Blue Jays bias, right? And so who knows, as more, you know, Houston Astros start appearing on ballots, maybe the writers in Houston, just as these guys linger, who knows, they could give more votes to the Houston Astros.
And again, like I'm bringing this argument back because I think it's important, is that if writers really felt that somebody should get in to the Hall, then they probably would get in within the first 5 years or something. You know, at some point, he's not...
That's not true. I don't believe that.
He's not as good as the people that keep showing up, that get voted in above these other players, or as famous.
There's been outright writers who have said that they wouldn't vote someone in first ballot because no one gets in first year.
Well, that was real dumb. I disagree with that 100%.
Sure, but there are writers that do this. They make them wait for the sake of making them wait. And then you get this, Tim Raines is on his 10th year, we have to get him in Rush, when the guy probably should have made it a long time ago. And this isn't Tim Raines' thing. I have a problem with the writers. Dave mentioned two things I have a problem with. One, they may not be informed on baseball players of past eras. And two, they might have biases. Yeah. People who can't be informed or have biases shouldn't be given votes. They have a responsibility. You're voting to the Hall of Fame. There's no bias.
Basically every baseball writer, then.
They should treat it with a bit more respect. And then you wouldn't have to have these rules.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. You know, people are human after all, right? So there are guys that this year have submitted a blank ballot. You know, what the f*** is that?
If you just pick
one or two names and submit it and just say, like, no, none of these guys are worthy of the Hall of Fame. Like, there's part of it is just baseball culture, right? It's old culture versus new culture, and just the concept that old baseball is sacred baseball and is not to be sullied.
The dumb thing about the blank ballot, dude, was that he submitted a blank ballot and signed it, which counts as zero votes, but he said he submitted a blank ballot on protest, that he returned his ballot. But what he essentially did was return a ballot with zero votes on it, so it counted, and it dinged everybody.
Yeah.
So he didn't know what he was doing. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how are we putting ballots in the hands of these that don't know what the rules are?
Yeah, well, anyways, are you guys in favor of the push, I guess, the move towards a public vote? I mean, writers disclosing their votes publicly.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think that makes them more accountable and probably less likely to submit a ballot with one vote or blank votes or whatever. And then
I agree that does that, but there's also the issue of backlash. You make these things public and say there's a guy who votes zero guys and that's his belief. And then there's this public backlash because the whole world knows it's all on Twitter. I don't think they should be influenced by the public on their vote.
But I mean, isn't it part of their responsibility as a journalist to make tough decisions?
And to tell the truth?
Yeah.
I think the vote should be public within the baseball writers community. I think they should be responsible to each other. I don't think they need to be responsible to the fans. They got to be responsible to the Baseball Hall of Fame. That's what I believe.
But it's the fans that go visit the Hall of Fame.
I'm not all for making the votes for the fans. It's not a fan favorite museum. It's a Baseball Hall of Fame. Best of the best.
Okay. Great talk. Let's take a break and do some trivia.
Okay, welcome back to the Bunch of the Gap podcast. I have failed at doing what I hoped for this podcast, which was talking as little as possible, and I'm going to be leading a segment called Younger or Older. So I'm going to name two players who have either been with the Blue Jays recently or are on the Blue Jays now, and I'm going to ask you guys, without looking at the roster or any type of stats in front of you, who is older of the two? Okay, got it?
So I'm answering who's older?
Yes.
Okay.
All windows are closed and you guys aren't cheating.
My computer just died anyway, so.
Okay, who's older? Jared Saltalamacchia or Melvin Upton Jr.?
I'm going to say Jared Saltalamacchia.
I'm going to say the same.
Melvin Upton Jr. is older. He was born in 84. Saltalamacchia in 85.
Ah.
Who is older? Marco Estrada or Troy Tulowitzki?
Marco Estrada.
I'm going to say Tulo.
Marco Estrada is older, born in 83. Who is older, Troy Tulowitzki or Steve Pierce?
Tulo.
Steve Pierce.
Steve Pierce is older. He was born April 13th, 1983, and Troy was born in October of 84. Who's older, Joe Biagini or Marcus Stroman?
Ooh.
Biagini.
Marcus Stroman.
Joe Biagini was born in 1990. Marcus Stroman is 91. Who's older, Dalton Pompey or Aaron Sanchez?
Pompey.
We go Sanchez.
Aaron Sanchez is older.
Yeah.
Born July 1st, 1992. Dalton Pompey, December 11th, 1992.
Oh, it's close.
Who is older, Ezekiel Carrera or Justin Smoke?
Smoke.
Ezekiel Carrera.
Justin Smoke, born December 5th, 1986.
Yeah, Smoke is nothing going for him.
All right, let's see how good your memory is. Who is older, Melvin Upton Jr. or Troy Tulowitzki?
Troy.
Troy Tulowitzki.
Melvin Upton Jr. is older, even though I previously mentioned his birth date. Killer, guys. All right, who is older, Devin Travis or Marcus Stroman?
Marcus Travis. Stroman.
Devin Travis is older. February 21st, 1991. Who is older, Russell Martin or Gavin Floyd?
Russ.
I'm going to say Floyd.
Gavin Floyd by about 3 weeks.
Oh.
January 27th, 1983 to Russell Martin's February 15th, 1983.
Ooh, we got birthdays coming up.
And last, who is older, Edwin Encarnacion or Kendrys Morales?
They're born in the same year, right? So I'm going to say
Eddie is older.
I'm going to say Kendrys by like a couple months.
Edwin Encarnacion just had his birthday January 7th, 1983. This is when he was born. Kendrys, 1983, but June 20th.
For the record, Kendrys does not look like he was born in 1983.
So the good news is I was not keeping track, so I don't know how either of you did.
Nick did a lot better.
I think you both did poorly.
I concede.
Okay.
All right, well, let's end us off with some trivia, and Dave can get some more soup in him. Okay, my trivia question for today is, which former Blue Jay has had the longest hitting streak in their career, not necessarily while they were a Jay?
Okay, so player who at one point played for the Blue Jays, longest career hitting streak.
Yes.
Got it.
Is it A, Paul Molitor, B, Ricky Henderson, C, Roberto Alomar, or D, Vladimir Guerrero?
I'm going to take Vlad.
I'm going to take Paul Molitor.
We have a winner. A, Paul Molitor had the longest career hitting streak.
Oh,
nice.
Yes. I'm on the board. Woo. Yes. Streak is snapped. Killing it.
So,
no, you are not getting crackers. They're for my soup. All right. So that's it. That's it for the Bunch of the Gap podcast. I'm going to go take a nap and get my strength back. You can find more episodes of the podcast on iTunes. Please rate and review us while you're there. We're also on Stitcher and Google Play Music. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/BuntTheGap, on Twitter, @BuntTheGap, on Instagram, @BuntTheGap, and you can visit our website, BuntTheGap.com. Email your questions, podcast@BuntTheGap.com. happy to answer them on the air, and we'll be back next week. There's only 18 days until pitchers and catchers report, so hang in there, baseball fans. We'll see you next week.